The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Anna Kogal from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Glamour.com. Well, welcome back, everyone. I'm so happy to be here with you. And I just wanted to let you know that I have been so happy to be with you for the last, oh my goodness, I think it's been about 3 years, 3 1/4 years. Time flies when you're having fun, at least for me. I wanted to thank you for being my audience, and wanted to let you know today is going to be my last day reading to you, because starting next week on, what day is that? I guess the 29th of August, starting a brand new school year and all that, you're going to have a brand new host, and she is awesome. Her name is Romani Arrowsmith. Can't get any better than that. And she will be your new host. She brings a wealth of new ideas, and she's going to be bringing you wonderful new features for the program, and I cannot wait for you to meet her. So, next week, Romani Arrowsmith is going to be your host, and hopefully from that point on for quite a long time. All right, so we're going to get right on this, and, you know, you think about how the world is and if you want it to change and so forth. Well, where do you start? I've often thought about that, from everything from, goodness gracious, politics to nutrition and exercise and all that stuff. Well, you talk with kids. So this is the name of this, the title of this article from Glamour.com. Want to change the world? Talk to kids. When people talk about things like self-care and good emotional health, the first piece of advice they offer is stop watching the news, which makes sense. The news causes stress. Stress causes wrinkles. Wrinkles cause more stress, which causes insomnia, which causes 3 iced coffees, which causes plastic straws, which cause climate change. That's right. I watched the news and made climate change happen. I'm sorry. But here's the thing. My job is watching the news. I'm a comedy writer. Specifically, I write jokes for a show called Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. And that means I spend much of my day reading and watching the news and then trying to make it funny. As you can imagine, some days it can be exhausting. I don't have to tell you about the news. Even if you're not watching it, you know. The news is like secondhand smoke. Just being around while it's happening is enough to make a person sick. Still, if I could summarize all the news in the world right now in just 4 words, it would be as follows. Grown-ups are the worst. Now, I can acknowledge full well that I am a grown-up. I own 2 dustbusters. If for any reason the primary dustbuster cannot perform its duties as prescribed, the dustbuster understudy, or dustbunder study, will be ready to take over. 2 dustbusters is as grown-up as it gets. But right now, I am sick of grown-ups. Of course, I'm specifically sick of the guy we're all thinking of from the news. But the rest of us exhaust me, too. I stay up late, unable to stop thinking about the refugee kids being torn from their parents. I wake up in the middle of the night because I can't forget what happened to a teenage U.S. citizen born in Dallas who was detained for 23 days at the border. I get enraged thinking about government lawyers arguing in court that immigrant children don't have to be given soap or blankets or toothbrushes. It's grown-ups who are doing this, and other grown-ups who are letting it happen. And the thing about grown-ups is we already have beliefs, and we're really, really bad at changing them. In fact, When we're presented with evidence we're wrong, more often than not, we double down. We have desperate Facebook arguments with people we went to high school with. Somebody calls somebody else a MAGA freak, and the word libtard gets used by actual adult humans who somehow have friends and utility bills and jobs, and nobody changes their mind. Grown-ups are the worst. But you know who's the next worst? Who's not the worst? Kids. The first time I realized I could give up on adults and reclaim all that wasted time and outrage was when I pitched a children's book called A Day in the Life of Marlon Bundo at my job. It was a story of notoriously anti-LGBTQ Vice President Mike Pence's very real bunny, Marlon Bundo, and his totally fictional, but also totally adorable, super gay bunny boyfriend, Wesley. It was fun to work on. My boss talked about it on television, and all the proceeds went to the Trevor Project and AIDS United. So the whole thing was a delightful experience. I swear the book is real. That is the premise, and it's available for purchase nationwide. But something else really cool happened. I started getting notes from parents about how their kids were telling their friends about how boys can fall in love with boys and girls can fall in love with girls. Even better, I started getting letters and videos from kids about how different is bad. Different isn't bad. Different is special. They were quoting our book back to me. It occurred to me, what if this is what I do? Maybe I write for kids to help me get through the days of dealing with grown-ups. Maybe kids are the remedy for the news. So one night, when the news became too much again, I wrote a book called The Someone Knew. It's about a very nervous chipmunk named Jitterbug, who is afraid to welcome someone new to her forest. Specifically, a wonderful snail called Pudding. Pudding, who has to leave his home after a flood. In the end, spoiler alert, Jitterbug learns from her friends that new can be scary, but kindness is stronger than fear. I think you get the metaphor. Did I write this for kids? Of course I did. Grown-ups don't want to read books about nervous chipmunks and otters named Duffles and Nudge. Their loss, honestly, they are solid otters who make some really good points. But I also wrote it because, in my heart of hearts, welcome someone new and kindness is stronger than fear are what I want to tell adults. Kids encounter new things all the time. New kids at school, new experiences, even new foods. It makes sense to be a little fearful of them. But unlike adults, kids are open to change. If you give them new information, they don't immediately get defensive or call it hashtag fake news. They take it in. And if it makes sense to them, they try to incorporate it into their lives. Earlier this month, Donald Trump tweeted that 4 U.S. citizen members of Congress should go back to the crime-infested places from which they came. Just reading it was a gut punch. Less than 24 hours later, crowds at a Trump rally chanted, "Send her back!" about Representative Ilhan Omar, Democrat of Minnesota. Again, a U.S. citizen. I felt helpless. Is this just the America we live in now? I didn't know what to do, so I did the adult thing and took to Twitter. I offered to give away 5 copies of The Someone Knew. Did I think I was going to make a dent in all the horribleness that was going on? Absolutely not. Was it a way to make myself feel like I was doing something when I had no idea how to help? For sure. But something happened. A few minutes after I made the offer, a woman I had never met messaged me. She wanted to send me money so I could donate more books. She didn't want anyone to know her name. She was just reading the same news I was and wanted to do something. Great. So I was going to give away 10 books. Except just as I started to type that, I got another message. A friend who felt helpless and thought that maybe giving away another 5 books about how kindness is stronger than fear might help. So 15 books, until it was 20, because one girl I hadn't talked to since high school got in touch, and then 25, thanks to a stranger who was terrified of being the kind of person who hears people chanting, "Send her back," and does nothing. And then within a couple of hours, it was well over 50 books. And I had to say, stop donating books, because I am not totally sure I am equipped to mail this many books. And also, I am crying. I went to bed feeling hopeful. I woke up to a phone call from my publisher who said, "Why don't we donate all those books? So all the money people were spending on books can go to a charity for immigrant kids." And they did. And it did. We didn't solve racism and xenophobia that night. I barely even solved learning how to mail 50 books. But I learned that kindness really is stronger than fear. I'm kidding. Ugh. Life isn't that simple. And nothing resolves as it would in a children's book. But I did learn that there are a lot of people out there trying their best. Oh, and that not all grown-ups are the worst. Also, in case you're interested, I got a metal straw. Climate change is no longer all on me. You're welcome. Jill Twiss is a comedy writer and number one New York Times best-selling children's book author. Her latest book is The Someone Knew. Well, I thought that was awesome. I hope you did. I really enjoyed that one. Very, very sweet. We can all do something in our own little capacities and little, you know, environments. All right. Our next one, enough with the myths about exercise during pregnancy. And this is by Garnet Henderson. When Erin Sella, a 35-year-old dancer and choreographer in New York City, was pregnant with the first of her two children, she was nervous about exercising, wary of persistent superstitions about the risks of exercise during pregnancy. But movement wasn't just her passion, it was her job. Her doctor reassured her that it was completely safe to keep exercising so long as she felt okay. So Sella continued to exercise and even perform through her second trimester. That didn't stop other people from judging her. I actually heard people gasp and say, "She's pregnant!" when the lights came up during the performances, she says. It was a little sad to realize some people still see movement and pregnancy as mutually exclusive. Women are bombarded with unsolicited opinions about their body at just about every stage of life, but it reaches a fever pitch during pregnancy. As a prenatal and postpartum certified personal trainer, I've heard all kinds of myths from concerned clients that exercise can deprive a fetus of oxygen, that there's a certain target heart rate you have to stay under, that jostling motions like running are inherently dangerous. The truth is, according to a deep, Library of Research, exercising during pregnancy is highly beneficial for both mom and baby. Regular exercise has been shown to prevent gestational diabetes, high blood pressure, and preeclampsia. It is beneficial for psychological well-being. It may even help your baby develop a healthy heart and reduce their risk of developing chronic disease later in life. Still, mommy shaming is rampant at the gym. I've seen countless other gym goers stare at my pregnant clients. Once a stranger even interrupted our session to march over to us and say, "Are you sure that's safe?" And many pregnant people have the frustrating experience of being told they can't take classes at their favorite studios once they disclose they're pregnant. What gives? What is the deal with exercise during pregnancy? As long as your regimen feels okay and doesn't pose a major risk of your falling or being hit in the belly, pregnancy isn't a great time to take up wrestling, for example. Generally, you can continue any exercise you were doing before pregnancy. In fact, it's recommended. Current guidelines say that healthy pregnant women with no pre-existing conditions should aim for at least 150 minutes of moderate activity per week, incorporating a mix of aerobic activity and resistance training. The key is hydration, says Jennifer Aquino, MD, an OBGYN at NYU Langone Health. Water helps from the placenta and amniotic sac. Water helps form the placenta and amniotic sac, and it helps to keep you cool during exercise. Since overheating is one of the biggest concerns of exercising while pregnant, you want to hydrate well, wear breathable clothes, and avoid any hot yoga. It's also a good idea to have a snack after working out to make sure your blood sugar doesn't get too low. The more athletic you are, the more intense exercise during pregnancy you can likely tolerate. I have lots of patients who ask if they can still take their HIIT classes, says Dr. Aquino. Absolutely, you can continue. Pregnant women have run marathons, after all. Just be sure to check in with your doctor about your training plans, Dr. Aquino adds. Pregnant women do, however, need to modify. You might take the same class, but drop the weights. Take more breaks and not push yourself quite as hard. It's not just because your body is changing shape. The hormonal roller coaster of pregnancy causes other physiological changes that can require adjustments. In the first trimester, high levels of progesterone can make you feel sluggish. At the same time, blood volume, heart rate, and cardiac output are all increasing. A recipe for fatigue. Translation, prepare to take more breaks. The placenta also produces a hormone called relaxin, levels of which peak in the first trimester and then right before delivery. Relaxin makes ligaments, joints, and muscles a bit more, you guessed it, lax. This certainly doesn't mean you can't exercise, but you should pay attention and modify movements that feel unstable or uncomfortable. And of course, as your belly grows, that irregularly distributed weight can change the way you move. Exercise can help prevent the back pain common in pregnancy, but avoid any positions that feel too uncomfortable. Pro tip, seeking out prenatal fitness classes or personal training sessions, even if it's just to supplement your other workouts, can help you learn to appropriately modify. There are exceptions to the rule. Women with conditions like placenta previa, severe anemia, any sort of lung disease, like uncontrolled asthma, heart disease or other heart conditions, a history of preterm labor, cervical issues, even those carrying twins or triplets, should avoid exercise, says Dr. Aquino. In addition, I tell patients to listen to their body, she says. If you're having headaches, chest pain, cramps, contractions, bleeding, or shortness of breath, it's time to stop or modify the activity. What about exercising while you're trying to conceive? Exercise is one of the best things you can do for your overall health. The better your overall health, the more likely you are to conceive and sustain a healthy pregnancy. While extremely heavy exercise may interrupt ovulation, vigorous to moderate exercise has actually been found to reduce the risk of certain types of infertility. Fertility treatments can impact your gym routine. If you're taking hormones to stimulate egg production, sometimes we do limit physical activity because the ovaries are very sensitive, says Dr. Aquino. They're essentially engorged. You may also need to take some time off after embryo implantation. That was the case for Elise Mock, a 34-year-old from Jackson, Wyoming, who is pregnant with her first child after undergoing in vitro fertilization. My fertility doctor advised me to take it easy the first few days after we did the embryo transfusion. For about 3 days, I had to lay low. And then around day 4 or 5, I was out and about. And after a week, I was hiking and jogging again, she says. I would say by 2 weeks, just after I found out the transfer took, I was back in the gym doing CrossFit. Maybe not quite at full intensity, but I was still getting a great workout. When I spoke with Mock, she was 6 days away from her due date and had just taken her last CrossFit class. It has been quite the ride, she says, but I feel fortunate to have maintained an active lifestyle. Gardit Henderson is a writer in New York City covering health, abortion access, and dance. Okay, finally, why am I so bloated? There's nothing that ruins your sense of confidence quite like these 5 little frustrating words, why am I so bloated? Feeling like you inexplicably have a food baby worthy of a Thanksgiving feast can really kill your vibe. Even more frustrating is that the causes of bloating are often tricky to pinpoint. Even if you think you're doing everything possible to prevent a dreaded case of bloating, like cutting out fizzy drinks or gluten or dairy, that might not do the trick. Food isn't the only thing that causes you to feel puffy. Bloating is when air enters the GI system and is unable to escape from above or below, says Niket Sonpal, MD, Associate Program Director of the Internal Medicine Residency at Brookdale Hospital Medical Center in Brooklyn. This causes the intestine to dilate like balloons and cause the belly to appear swollen. Just because you feel bloated doesn't necessarily mean you look it. There are actually 2 ways to experience bloating, says Tamara Freuman, a New York-based registered dietitian who specializes in digestive disorders and author of The Bloated Belly Whisperer, Subjectively and Objectively. Yes, this does make bloating sound like some sort of philosophical crisis. The first is more about how you feel, she explains. A feeling you have of increased pressure or discomfort, just shy of pain, caused by tension within the GI tract from food, gas, stool. In some cases, however, it's visible, which is what Freuman means when she says you can experience it objectively. The abdomen actually distends, and we can see a visible increase in your waistline, she says. If you think your abdomen as essentially a box with limited volume, if you put stuff in, food, or there is excess gas produced within, and a commensurate amount is not coming out, at some point the box starts to fill, and the muscles of the abdominal wall are going to need to stretch to accommodate the volume of contents within. Of course, these 2 aren't mutually exclusive, meaning that you can definitely feel and look bloated at the same time. So, what can we do about it? Well, no, hold on. As for why you're feeling puffy, there could be a ton of reasons, but in general, when you experience bloating, it's likely to be triggered by your body's reaction to one or more of the following: food volume, gas, and or stool. Among the worst food offenders for bloat, bulky, high-fiber foods that take up a lot of space as they head through your digestive tract. Think popcorn and big kale salads. These foods can be like food babies, especially for people with lax abdominal wall muscles, or if they're already backed up, as she puts it. Other bad bloat offenders include beans, broccoli, fruit, wheat, potatoes, corn, cabbage, Brussels sprouts, asparagus, most fruits, and noodles. So quite a large portion of a standard healthy diet. Bacteria in the intestines digest parts of these foods and spit out gas. Foods that contain certain types of fermentable fibers or sugars that can also create a large amount of intestinal gas hours after being eaten when they encounter the bacteria living in the colon, says Freumann. The foods in this category are collectively known as high FODMAP, F-O-D-M-A-P, and they range from foods we typically think of as gassy, like beans and Brussels sprouts, to those that may surprise you, like cashews or watermelon. There's a twist, though. Freumann says that not every high FODMAP food makes everyone gassy. It's different for everyone. She suggests talking to a dietitian trained in the low FODMAP diet to identify which foods are triggers for bloating for you. All right, and so how to de-bloat? There's a common thread you might be picking up on. It's that bloating caused by foods has a lot to do with being gassy and full intestines. And that's really only one thing that it has to do with. Passing a bowel movement with flatulence helps to improve symptoms the most. If you're not looking for a quick way to get rid of that bloated feeling, get yourself secluded restroom and do the thing. A walk can help get things moving. Also, taking a walk after meals helps your abdominal muscles contract and expel air. There's also over-the-counter products like simethicone. Yoga positions are only likely to help bloating if you are suffering from trapped intestinal gas. And however, if you have bloating from acid reflux or too slow to empty stomach, then inverted yoga positions could actually make you feel worse. Bloating that literally never goes away can be a point of concern and merit a trip to your doctor to rule out more serious causes such as certain cancers, ovarian or colon, or celiac disease. And bloating that's accompanied by unintended weight loss, nutritional deficiencies, especially iron or B12, or blood in the stool should be checked out by a gastroenterologist. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time with Romani Arrowsmith. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Anna Kogal, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired, and the podcast is available at our broadcast, ncreadingservice.org. Call 919-832-5138 with any comments or questions. I've loved being with you and will miss you. Take care.